Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good morning, everyone. It is Saturday, September the 25th, 2021. It is currently 11:13 a.m. Central Time, and I'm coming to you from the empty sanctuary of Victory Baptist Church, located right here in Ovalo, Texas. And I hope you're ready. I hope you're ready. Okay, I don't know what you're doing right now. I need you to stop what you're doing. Stop. Stop what you're doing. You may be driving your car. Pull over to the side of the road. Stop what you're doing. You need to hear what I'm about to say. We are about to begin not only a new week of Bible study, we are about to begin 6 weeks of Bible study, all focused on one thing. 1 John. 6 weeks at a minimum, but we're going to try to follow the schedule for the next 6 weeks. 1 John is to become your very best friend. 1 John, you are to become more intimately knowledgeable of 1 John than you are of your own spouse. You are to live, breathe. I want you to you're going to read 1 John so many times over the next six weeks. I want you reading it over and over and over again. This is going to be, I hope, one of the most important studies you've ever participated in. I really do hope that it's going to be that. I really hope that you will find anyone and everyone you know who could even be remotely interested in studying 1 John. Even if they're not, maybe you know they're interested in it, even if they don't know. Convince them that they are interested in the study of 1 John, and please have them subscribe to the Theology Central podcast. They can subscribe to our YouTube page. Whenever we get out of YouTube jail, I think we're about an hour or two away from being removed from YouTube jail. Then I'll start uploading everything to YouTube that we've not been able to upload over the last 7 days. We won't go through that whole story, but they can subscribe. We're on every podcasting platform on the face of the sun. Subscribe to the Theology Central podcast, please, and then they'll be able to follow along for the next 6 weeks. After the end of 6 weeks, if they're done, that's okay. They can delete us and never have to listen to us again. But maybe they'll just stick with us for at least 6 weeks as we dive in. When I say dive in, okay, we're going deep into 1 John. And I hope that this is going to prove to be a very beneficial study. Now, let me make it very clear. We're going to lead a lot of people to becoming very upset with us and probably disagree greatly with us. But I'm going to try to walk you through. We're going to take 1 John, the epistle of 1 John. And we are going to be honest and fair with how almost most of evangelical Christianity, how your church probably interprets 1 John, probably how you yourself interpret 1 John. Okay, well, we're getting some comments. Now, I haven't received any comments on anything else I've done today, so this is always good when I get more comments on a Bible study exercise than I do on anything else. Now, I do think the devotional this morning on the Glorify God test, I think that was good. Okay. The other one was just dealing with the frustrations of the American church. That's okay. I don't care if anyone comments on that, but I'm very glad to see people commenting. So thank you to Will and Ben, who are both listening right now. And if anybody else is listening, thank you very much. All right. So what we're going to do, I'm going to try to be very open and honest with how most people interpret 1 John, how your church, I can almost guarantee how your church interprets it. No matter who you are, no matter where you're listening. And we're going to try to offer a counter approach to the book. So this is going to be our focus. Yes, we're going to work through 1 John for 6 weeks at a minimum. Okay, we're going to try to follow the schedule. We're going to try my best to follow the schedule. We are going to possibly utilize everything I can. I may have to interrupt our study on the Niagara Creed tomorrow. I may have to, but we're going to use Sunday school. I don't want to interrupt Romans. I'm going to use sermons, Sunday school, and then podcast. We're going to utilize other sermons. We'll do sermon reviews on other sermons. We're going to utilize anything and everything available to have us dive into 1 John. But the entire focus, I want to make sure everyone writes this down, is it's going to be focused on hermeneutics. All right? That's what we're going to be focused on. Someone may be listening and don't have a clue what hermeneutics is. Hermeneutics is the theory and methodology of interpretation, especially the interpretation of biblical text. Hermeneutics is the theory and methodology of interpretation. We're going to figure out what is the correct method, the correct way to interpret 1 John. That's what we're going to be focused on. Well, I'm going to present you all of the different theories, right? And then we're going to see which ones work and which ones do not work, if we are open and honest with ourselves and open and honest with the text. I think if we're open and honest with the text, we will realize some of these just don't work. They just don't work in a practical, logical way. They fall apart. But it's going to be a lot of emphasis on hermeneutics, especially at the beginning. All right. So that's what we're going to do. So before we do anything else, now, if you have access to the curriculum, remember, there is curriculum. If you'll go to theologycentral.net, go to the blog section, look for the Daily Discipleship Guide article, follow the link. It'll take you to Ministry Grid. Go ahead and sign up. You're going to want to look at the curriculum. And here's the reason why. The other times the curriculum just kind of supplements what we do. In this particular case, the curriculum will be providing us one method of hermeneutics. We're going to look at how they are interpreting it. And then for every session, we will challenge their interpretation. Maybe we'll find that we agree. I can almost guarantee that we will not. Okay, but we will look at how they approach it, and then we will counter it. So you're going to want to have access to the curriculum. So here's what I challenge you to do. I need you, if you don't have one right now, if there's not one in your house, as soon as you can get to Office Depot, wherever you get maybe notebooks and pencils, get in your car, go right now and get a notebook that's completely empty and it's dedicated, and that notebook is going to be used for nothing other than the study of 1 John. Because I want it to all be self-contained in one notebook so that you don't have to go, wait, someone said something about 1 John. See, we studied that in the past. I want you to have that notebook. Put on the cover 1 John, and then it's going to be your notebook. You can write down notes that you learned from me and then what you're doing in your own study. I know a lot of people will want to use a digital format. I really think you should use a physical one for this. I really do. Right, I think you need to be physically writing it down. I just think it'll be beneficial, and I just really want you to have this like on your bookshelf and say, "Man, that was." Now at the end of it, you may say, "He's a complete idiot, and that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard." But it was an interesting 6 weeks of my life. I want you to have it on your bookshelf. People say, "What's that?" Oh, that's when I listened to this idiot stumble through 1 John. It was the most embarrassing thing that I've ever witnessed. But I keep the notebook just for laughs. Okay, I'm getting a question. Should Christians use preferred pronouns? Okay, well, I can't answer your question right now, but I will get to that at some other time. We've talked about it before, but okay. All right. It's just interesting the things that people send me, because usually they don't realize I'm live on the air, but that's okay. All right. So distractions. But I really would challenge you, get a notebook. And it's just for 1 John. Don't use it for anything else, all right? Don't let anyone else touch it for anything else. If your wife needs to write something down, no, honey, put that down. If your kids need something, I don't care if they're going to fail high school. They cannot use your 1 John notebook, okay? It's only for 1 John, okay? I don't care. I don't care if you need to put out the fire in your house, don't use your 1 John notebook. It's got to be protected, all right? Because I really believe this is going to be a very important study. So get a notebook. And of course, you know what I believe. Pencils, and the reason, not only because I prefer to write in pencil, just because I believe it's so symbolic, because I am fallible. I'm not infallible, so I write in pencil. It's just I've always just kind of kept that mindset just to keep remind me when I'm taking those notes, I am fallible. Whenever I write a word in pencil, I'm telling myself, I am fallible. I am fallible. I am fallible. I am fallible. So, and I go into this knowing that I am fallible and that I'm going to go against pretty much everyone else. I know I'm going to be in the minority here. I know I'm going to be in the minority, but I'm willing to do just that. Okay. I'm willing to do just that. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to have that notebook. All right. Have it ready to go. If you don't have it now, that's okay. You can transfer any notes you take from this to that. You can put down for your introduction. I want you to have a notebook. I want you to have pencils. I want you to have access to the curriculum. I really believe you're going to need access to the curriculum. And I cannot stress this enough. Just start reading 1 John over and over and over. If you can't read it because you're busy, if you have a commute to work, I don't know if it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, listen to it. You're like, well, I don't want to buy an audio Bible. Download the Blue Letter Bible app. You just go to 1 John chapter 1, tap on verse 1. It'll bring down a menu and it'll say audio Bible, and you just hit it and it'll read. And you can even set it to read the chapter 7 times, I think. You can use the Blue Letter Bible app. That's absolutely free, and you can have it read to you. Listen to it as much as you can. And you have to understand this. The reason you have to read it over and over and over and over and over and over again is one of the key elements, absolutely the key element in hermeneutics, which is Bible interpretation, is observation. You've heard me say this a million times. The quality of your interpretation is dependent on the quality of your observation. The quality of your observation is dependent on the amount of time you read it and 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 read it. The more you read, the more notes you take, the more you observe. The more you observe, the better position you put yourself in, a better position to actually interpret. You can't interpret what you don't see. You can't interpret what you don't observe. Your interpretation will be based off ignorance. Your interpretation has to be based off observation. You've got to observe it. You live with it. You've got to live with 1 John. It's got to become like I said, you've got to be more intimately aware and understanding of 1 John than you are of your own spouse. You've got to know everything about it. Now, if you don't care to understand it and interpret it correctly, then you can just skip that and you can just throw out your interpretation. But that drives me crazy, okay? So we got to spend some time with it. So curriculum, notebook, pencil, read, 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 read. Now, here's what we're going to do for our introduction. I'm going to go straight to the curriculum. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go straight to the curriculum because I think it gives us a good starting point. All right. Now, if you have access to the curriculum, you can go ahead and open it up. I'm going to tell you where to go. And you can already look at it. Yesterday, when I was concluding our Bible study exercise in 1 Kings, someone who was listening live, they were looking at the curriculum. They were following along. So that just makes it easy when it's right there. So here we go. I'm going to open up the curriculum. Going to open up the curriculum. All right. You'll notice when you open up the curriculum, I'm looking at the adult personal study guide. I'm not even using the leader's guide right now. All right. It says this: Bible Studies for Life, KJV Adults Personal Study Guide, Fall 2021. Right. It has a photograph. I always like looking at the photographs to see what symbolism could be involved there or what they're trying to say. To me, it's, you know, the key way to interpret a movie. I've stated it. If you don't know this, if you've never done any study in film study, the absolute key way to interpret a movie is the opening scene. The opening scene are usually put there to really help you. Like sometimes they'll summarize the entire movie. So this photograph here is a woman on a very, very, very long bridge, and she's walking. It's a very narrow bridge. And it's a long bridge. So it's almost like symbolically, we're getting ready to begin a journey. It's a long journey. Maybe it's a very narrow journey because can only be one right interpretation of the book, right? I don't know exactly what they want. Now, of course, the image here has the leaves changing color, so it's to represent fall. So this is our journey through the fall 2021, and it's going to take us through 1 John. Study one is no doubt 6 things we can know for sure. That's interesting. That's giving me a clue in which direction they're going. Right there, I already know how they're going to interpret 1 John. You probably already know, all right? You probably already know, okay? I'm getting now more messages, right? I get so many messages. I think the way to get messages from people is to go live on the air. Okay, here we go. So study one, no doubt, 6 things we can know for sure, all right? Study two, walking in confidence. Now, the walking in confidence is going to get us back in Genesis. If we have to skip that, we will skip it because 1 John is what I really, 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 really want to focus on, all right? You go down. It gives us the breakdown for the sessions. I'm not going to read that. They give us the welcome, all right? They do make an interesting point here. Did you know that most guests visit a Bible study group because a group member invited them? Hopefully people will invite people to participate in our Bible study group here, all right? They go on. They give some introduction. I'm going down. They have the discipleship plan. You can look at that. And then here we are. No doubt. 6 things we can know for sure. Oh, there we go. Now we know, I think you're already getting an idea of where we're going. I know I'm repeating myself, but I want you to just try to hear where they're going because this gives you an idea of their, this is always important. Whenever you pick up a Bible study guide, remember they are putting forth their idea, which, and this is so subtle. If you're not careful, I don't care if it's a commentary, I don't care if it's a sermon, I don't care what it is, they almost, well, at the very beginning, and I just took off my glasses, they hand you a pair of glasses, and that becomes your presuppositional grid and how you read the text. So already, just the title of this study, that's one of the things I do in the Bible, I don't know if you've noticed, for the Bible study exercise, I put Bible study exercise, and I don't give it a cool little title, I just put the text down. Because if I put a little title, most likely that will impose a presuppositional idea of what I want you to see in the text. So I don't do that. I just put the scripture itself. It's not very smart from a podcasting perspective because, you know, people just say, oh, that's a, whatever. You got to give it a cool title. You got to give it a cool title. That gets the people to click on your podcast. But I don't care. I do care about numbers because obviously you want people to listen when you put forth all the work it takes to produce a podcast. But what's more important to me is I don't want to corrupt anyone's under. We're studying 1 Kings chapter 19. I don't want them to know. I don't want them to have any presupposition. Let's just work through the text. So what did I do? 1 John. Bible study exercise, 1 John part 1. I'm not going to give it any cute title because that puts an idea there. Well, you know, I know in the publishing world, you've got to give it something. So no doubt, 6 things we can know for sure. So their approach to 1 John is to say, hey, 1 John is supposed to then remove all doubt and give you things that you can know for sure. So you can almost write down that their approach to the book, 1 John, has something to do with assurance. 1 John has something to do with assurance. Now that is a hermeneutical presupposition. You're going to read 1 John and it's about assurance. We did this in our study on the Sermon on the Mount. Now we could have continued that for a long time, but I think I proved my point. We were listening to sermons where someone's presupposition that the Sermon on the Mount basically served as a test to see if you were saved, right? We went through all of that, and that was their presupposition. Now, in many cases, they were very inconsistent in their hermeneutic. Here, we're going to see, are they going to be consistent in this hermeneutic? And let me ask you a question. I want you to really think about this. If you read 1 John in an open, honest way, does it lead you to feelings of assurance or does it leave you with feelings of doubt? This week, when you start reading 1 John over and over and over and over, I want you to be as honest with yourself as you can be. Does this give me feelings of assurance or does it make you fear for your eternal destination? Does it make you scared to death? I've been told over and over, this book is there to give me assurance. This book is to give me assurance. This book is to give assurance. Does it really bring assurance? And what is required for it to bring assurance? Do you have to then kind of start manipulating the text, changing the text, backing up a little bit to give it a feeling of assurance? But that's clearly the direction they're going to go. Here's what they say. Live unashamed. The book of 1 John gives us multiple assurances related to our walk with Christ. With such assurances, doubts fade, and we can live our lives undaunted and unashamed. So they believe the way, in fact, not this is their presupposition they are placing on the text. Hey, when you read this, all doubts are going to go away. All concern is going away. You're going to be assured. You're going to find assurance. And there are going to be six things you're going to know. And here's their sessions. Now, we're behind, obviously, because it started on September the 5th, but that's okay. Session one is supposed to be that we are sure of forgiveness. And that's going to be based off 1 John chapter 1, verse 5 to chapter 2, verse 2. Now, what's interesting is they skip verses 1 through 4, all right? And again, our goal is, this is not to be so much a verse-by-verse exposition as a journey into a text to determine the hermeneutical approach one should take to correctly understanding the text. That's our goal. It's not so much a verse-by-verse exposition, because that would, we would obviously have to spend a year, minimum, easy. So 6 weeks is not about a verse-by-verse exposition. It's a journey into a text to determine what is the correct hermeneutical approach so that we can end up with a correct understanding. So what they're going to focus on the first week is that somehow when you read 1 John chapter 1, verse 5 to chapter 2, verse 2, you can be sure of forgiveness. You can know that you have received forgiveness from God, and that you have been truly forgiven. All right, that sounds good. Now, is that how we should understand that text? Is that what that text is saying? How should we understand it? Session two, sure of a relationship. 1 John chapter 2, verse 3 to verse 11. Then they skip to verse 15 through 17. So the second thing we're supposed to be sure of is that we have a relationship. I think we can base it off what I know about 1 John. They're going to say that this book is going to give you assurance that you have a relationship with God. Now, what is the basis of that assurance? How do I know I have a relationship with God? What is the basis of that assurance? What is it? Well, if you've read 1 John, you know what a lot of people think it is. Number three, sure of the truth. 1 John chapter 2, verses 18 through 29. You can be sure of the truth. Now, what do they mean by that? We'll wait and see, because each session, we're going to try to determine what they have to say, and then we're going to look at it and go, is that accurate or true? Next, sure of victory, 1 John 3, verse 19 to chapter 4, verse 4. Now, that's going to be interesting. What kind of victory are they referring to? Ultimate victory? Are they going to say that I can have some assurance of victory right now? And if you say that I can have assurance of victory right now, what does that victory look like? Because it's not going to look like sinless perfection. And if it doesn't look like sinless perfection, and is that victory? Or is it just that I'm sinning somewhat less or sinning in a different way? Like that those are questions we're going to have. Sure of God's love. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7 to verse 13. Then they skip to verse 19 and 20. One, sure of forgiveness, sure of a relationship, sure of the truth, sure of victory, sure of God's love. And then the last one is sure of salvation. 1 John chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, then verses 11 through 13, then verses 18 through 21. Sure of salvation. Now, if we go down, they have an introduction. They have a photograph here of a pencil looking like it's sitting on some kind of math work, which is horrible, okay, because I hate math. Okay, that's a whole different story, right? And then it says here, and I'm just going to get us a little bit of introduction here. No doubt, six things we can know for sure. Now, that's been repeated now multiple times. And why is that important to realize? Because that's, once again, throwing that presupposition on the text. They want you to know this is the way they want you to look at the text exactly this way. They're putting on the pair of glasses on you. And you have to realize that, because maybe they're right. But the point is they're already convincing you that this is the way to interpret the text before you've ever actually even read the text. That's dangerous. That's why I tell you all the time, outlines should never contain interpretation. So when I look at a Bible dictionary and they give me an outline of a book, if I see interpretation, I don't care. I throw out that outline, because that outline is giving you a presupposition to the text. You got to learn to see the text, not what everyone says about the text. That's hard to do. Trust me. They go on to say this. Nothing is certain but death and taxes. Right? Everyone knows that line of reasoning. Everyone knows that saying. There's nothing is certain in life but death and taxes. No one knows for sure who actually said it first, but I know one thing. It's not true. All right. So they're like, we don't know who said it first, that the only thing certain in life is death and taxes, but he says it's not sure. For example, most of us could quickly call out the names of people we are sure who love us. Mathematicians and accountants can be certain of the sum of a group of numbers. Of course, we can. Of course, we all also have a lot of things we can't know for sure. Will our team win this year? What will the economy do? Will Lucy ever let Charlie Brown kick the football? That's a pretty dated reference. I wonder how many people even know what that's referencing. Probably a lot of young people have no clue what that is, but that's okay. A lot of people struggle with certainty in their spiritual lives. Oh, now we're getting to the essence here. A lot of people struggle with certainty in their spiritual lives. So let's stop right here. It's very important. Do you struggle with certainty? And how should that uncertainty be resolved? How should it be fixed? How should we overcome that? All right? So I want you to think about this idea of uncertainty, right? Just keep that in mind, right? Here we go. Am I really saved? Will I go to heaven when I die? These are questions we can answer with confidence. Stop right there. What would lead me to have the ability to say with confidence, I am saved, and when I die, I'm going to heaven. I know this. It's a certainty. What could I cling to give me such certainty? Now, here's the question. I want you to think about this. Would I look to what I do and what I don't do to give me such certainty, or would I look to what the eternal Son of God did, completed, and finished perfectly? What would give me the greatest certainty? What I do, what I don't do, or what Christ completed perfectly? That he completed with certainty, he finished it. It is finished. Do I look to what Christ did? Do I look to something that is in me, done by me, or do I look to something that is alien to me, that is imputed or accredited to me? Let me state it this way. What will give me the greatest certainty? Looking to the righteousness I demonstrate in my thoughts, actions, words, and deeds, or do I find certainty in having the righteousness of God accredited to me? Which righteousness would give me the greatest certainty? My righteousness demonstrated in my thoughts, words, and deeds, or the righteousness of Christ, which is attributed or accredited or imputed to my account? Where do you find certainty? And what you do or what was done? Where do you find certainty? In your righteousness demonstrated in your thoughts, words, and deeds, or in the righteousness of Christ, which is attributed or imputed or accredited to your account? I want you to really think about that, because this is all about certainty, right? All right, the curriculum wants us to think about this is where we're going to find assurance. But where do we find the assurance? How do I know I'm saved? How do I know to go to heaven? Where do I look to find such assurance? Very, very, very important question. I'm going to read this again. A lot of people struggle with certainty in their spiritual lives. Am I really saved? Will I go to heaven when I die? Those are questions we can answer with confidence. The Apostle John's short letter, 1 John, was written to answer those very questions. So their presupposition that they're placing upon the text is when I read 1 John, 1 John is there to give me the answer to the question, am I saved? Will I go to heaven? How can I know? And that 1 John is the book written to answer those questions. Now, I'm assuming that everyone listening will, Ben. Now, the message I got from another source, someone said yes. I don't know if they were referring to something I had just asked on a broadcast or they were referencing something else. So I don't know. Whoever may be listening, I think you all, if you've been to church for any length of time, I think you will agree that you were taught that 1 John is there to basically give you this assurance of whether you are saved, and that the way it does this is by making you look at your actions. I think everyone's going to have to agree. That's probably the way you were taught about 1 John. And if anybody wants to answer, they can. I can almost guarantee that's what you were taught. That's how I was taught. I was taught early on. I think I was taught this in every Bible college. I don't know how many courses I've taken on 1 John. I've lost count. But I've taken a lot of courses on 1 John, and almost every time it starts off this. 1 John is your test book. If you want to test to see if you're saved, 1 John. If you want to test to see if someone else is saved, 1 John. 1 John is your test book. Now, that test book is either going to demonstrate you fail or it's going to demonstrate you pass, and then the result will be assurance. But the only way to get assurance is to pass the test. You fail the test, you don't have assurance. So if you want assurance, 1 John is the test book. And I'm holding up a Bible right here. And, you know, if you keep hearing that sound, I don't know if you can hear that. Yeah. So I always forget when I'm picking up things and dropping things and throwing things that nobody listening knows what's going on. Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. So you already get the, this is their presupposition they're putting upon the text. Now, they may be 100% right. They could be 100% wrong. I just don't like that the presupposition is being placed upon the text prior to us actually reading and studying the text. We got to let the text determine this. And I know that's hard because when you've been taught a certain way, it's there. It's just built into your brain. And I was taught it this way of thinking over and over and over. But was I right in teaching it and putting forth that same idea? I don't know how many new young Christians I taught this idea to. Yeah, yes, Will said, I've heard it many times. Okay, good. You probably have even heard it from me. And now I'm going to challenge and go, was I right? Was I right? Was I right? Was I right? Because we that's what we have to do. We have to. This is such an example of our presuppositions driving the train of Bible study. If people have doubts, people will send them to home to read 1 John. That's a very good point, Will. That's a very good point. A lot of time in any kind of counseling where people have doubts about their salvation, they will be sent home or maybe even be given a copy of 1 John. May even be given a copy of 1 John. That's a very, very good point. Thanks, Will, for saying that. That is very true. So now, but here's what I want you to realize. It's so important that whenever we get ready to study anything, I don't care what you're getting ready to study, you got to take all of the past presuppositions and you've got to get rid of them. I know I use this all the time. Some people like when I use the illustration. Some people think it's too violent, but that's okay. Our presuppositions, our past understanding, it's like our little pet and we call it Fluffy. Oh, I love Fluffy. Fluffy, I love Fluffy. Fluffy's my little presupposition, but Fluffy has to die. I'm sorry. You got to take Fluffy out behind the church. I tell this to my people all the time. Hey, you got to go out behind the church and we got to put Fluffy down. Now in Texas, everybody knows what that means. You got to go out back there and shoot Fluffy. Okay. I wouldn't be able to do it. I would not be able to do it. I could have stories about, when I wouldn't able to, I was not my cat. I'll just go ahead and say this just for illustration purposes. my cat. It was one of those weird situations in Texas where it got freezing cold. And my cat had crawled up into the engine block to try to find some warmth. I don't know why it was outside, but it was outside, okay? And I got woke up the next morning. It was freezing. I'm like, oh, I got to go. So I went and started the truck, and it went cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. And I'm like, what is going on? Well, it got under, like, the blade of the fan, and it was not good. When I finally got the truck to start and backed up, there was my cat. And it was not in good shape. It was bad. It was bad, 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 bad. And it was like, oh, man, it was suffering. And I was like, there's no way the thing is going to survive. I got to put this out of its misery. I've got to. And I was all crying, didn't know what to do. Went in, got the gun, came back. And I tried like three times, and I could not. I kept missing. My aim is bad, but I couldn't do it. So my girlfriend came over, and, well, she ended my cat's life, right? So, well, that's a very graphic illustration of what has to happen, right? Fluffy's got to go. And you don't want to shoot Fluffy. You may miss a couple of times, but your presupposition has to go. Now, that makes you nervous, right? Because you're like, well, wait a minute. If my presupposition goes, that's the way I've understood the book for 5 years. That's the way I've understood the book for 10 years. And if that goes, I don't know what I believe, and I don't know what to do. I understand it makes you nervous, but sometimes it has to go. Now, listen, it just goes temporarily, right? Because after you're done studying the text, you may be able to go back behind the church and then revive Fluffy, bring Fluffy back to life, and then you have your presuppositions back. But you have to set them aside every time you study, because if you don't, all you're going to see for the rest of your life is the presupposition that you've already placed upon the text, and you can never grow. You can never be challenged. And that is dangerous. That is dangerous, because if your past understanding was in error, then your future understanding will continue in such error. So I have to stress, especially with 1 John, because as was just pointed out by Will in the comment section, that not only has he heard it many times, that whenever you have a doubt, the pastor's like, go home and read 1 John. And he tells you why you're going home to read 1 John, because that's going to fix your doubts. That's going to fix your doubts. Now, let's go back to the curriculum. I got to get back down here. Here we go. Where the page? I lost the page. All right. They go on to say here, the Apostle John's short letter, 1 John, was written to answer these very questions. What questions? Am I really saved? Will I go to heaven when I die? Those kind of questions. And then they quote this. This is very important. These things have I written unto you that believe on the name of the Son of God, that you may know that you have eternal life. 1 John 5:13. No doubt about it. John wanted us to have no doubt. Join me as we dive into this wonderful little letter. We will discover 6 ways John assured us that we can have assurance. We can live with no doubt. So 1 John 5:13, is the interpretive key. They believe the entire interpretation hinges on 1 John 5:13. Let me read it again. These things have I written unto you that believe on the name of the Son of God, that you may know that you have eternal life, or that ye have eternal life. 1 John 5:13. Their conclusion, their presupposition is that 1 John 5:13 is the interpretive key. But I want to make it very clear to you. Throughout church history, not everyone has agreed with that. Shocking, I know. Now, you'll probably never be told that from the pulpit, because we don't ever bother to worry about that. But not everyone agrees with that assessment. Some people believe the key to interpreting the book is found in 1 John chapter 1, not in 1 John chapter 5. In fact, I've got an article. Let's see, do I have it here? Yes. Have an article here called Two Views of 1 John. Two Views of 1 John. And it starts this way. How should I interpret 1 John? This article contrasts two opinions. Your interpretation of 1 John depends on the perceived purpose of the book. Did you hear that? It determines on your perceived purpose of the book, what you perceive to be the purpose of the book, what you perceive to be the purpose of the book. Now, that's very dangerous, right? Because that becomes very subjective, right? So now some will say, well, 1 John 5, that's not subjective. That's objective. That is the objective purpose of the book. Are you sure you're reading that correctly? Maybe you are. Maybe you're not. So here is what we're going to do this week. All right, here you go. I'm going to just give you some assignments here, right? It's going to be very straightforward. I want you, first and foremost, I want you to, I'm going to give you just a number of things to do. All right? I was going to kind of try to explain it, but we'll just work through them, all right? I want you, obviously, I've already given you what you need. You need the curriculum. Definitely please have the curriculum. Have the notes. And please sign up for the curriculum, please. I don't care about getting the numbers up, but I just, look, someone's paying for us to have access to this, and I think this time the curriculum is going to be very valuable, all right? So please sign up for that. Have a notebook, have a pencil, and then I want you just to read 1 John. I want you to read it at a minimum of 5 times. I know people are not going to do this. I know if you don't do this, I'm begging you. I'm pleading with you. If I had money, I would pay you to do it. Man, these chapters are so short, right? 1 John chapter 1 is 10 verses. 1 John chapter 2 is 29 verses. 1 John chapter 3 is 24 verses. 1 John chapter 4 is 21 verses. And 1 John chapter 5 is 21 verses, all right? That's short. Read it 5 times at a minimum. And one of those times, try to find a place where you can read it out loud, please. If you can't read it out loud, listen to it be read out loud. And the reason why is when you read it silently, sometimes you'll read past something, and then when you hear it out loud, it makes you stop and go, whoa, wait, what happened? I've already demonstrated that in some of the Bible study exercises. I read it out loud to you guys, and all of a sudden I'll stop and go, wait, what is going on there? Okay, and all of a sudden it sounds different. I hear it differently. It changes my entire perspective. Sometimes I think usually to the better. It's usually for the good. So read it 5 times. Read it in a minimum 5 times. You're going to read it far more than that before we're done, but just 5 times. If you can do it in one sitting, that would be wonderful if you can. Because by reading it over and 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 over, you'll start seeing structure, you'll start seeing a flow, and you'll start seeing things. And that's your observation, all right? I want you to read it over and over and over. As you read it over and over and over, ask yourself what you think the key verse is. What do you think the key verse is? What do you think the key verse is? All right? Okay? So read it 5 times, one of those times out loud, and just start asking, what do you think the key verse is? What do you think? I know you're thinking, I could tell you to do an outline, but I don't even want you to do an outline right now. I don't want you to read it and think of what the key verse is. And then here's the third thing I want you to do. I got to be very careful here because I don't know if I want to do this now in the introduction, but I'm just going to go ahead and have you work on this. I want you to start with the idea that what the curriculum is saying, that the book is there to somehow give you assurance, all right? To take away your doubt, to answer the question, are you saved or are you not saved? Now, for some of you, this is going to be easy because you've read the book this way your entire life. So this should be easy. But I want you to, as you're reading, all right, so you read it 5 times, then I want you to take on your notebook, I want you to go through and write down assurance or path to assurance. Do that. Path to assurance or steps to assurance, however you want to write that down. Path to assurance or steps to assurance. And I want you to go through 1 John, whether this interpretation is right or wrong, I want you to do this. I want you to write down anything and everything in 1 John that would seem to be the steps or the path that would lead to assurance. This is what I have to do to get assurance. I want you to write down, okay, this is what I have to do. If I'm going to have assurance, I have to do this. And I want you to write them down and don't modify them, right? Don't do that nonsense where you say, well, I don't have to do this perfectly. Write it down the way it's in the text. If the text says, basically, you know, I'll just throw in an idea. Hey, if you want assurance that if you're saved and that you're going to go to heaven, you've got to love your brother. Okay, then write that down. Love your brother. But use the very words of the text. Don't summarize it. Use the very words of the text and write them exactly as they are found. All right. So read it five times, one of those times out loud. Try to determine what you think the key verse is in the book. All right. Then I want you to write down steps to assurance or paths to assurance. I want you to go through the book and write down anything and everything you think would be like, oh, here's a step I have to take. Here's the path to assurance. Here's, if I want to know for sure, here's what I have to do. And I want you to have them all written down using the very language of the text. Then at the conclusion of that list, ask yourself and be honest, do you find yourself with assurance or with more doubt? All right. This is very key, right? Because remember, everyone says, hey, this is the book to take away all your doubt. This is the book to give you assurance. I mean, that's how the curriculum is handling it. Hey, by the time you're done, these are six things you're going to know, and you're going to have assurance so that you can live with no doubt. You can live literally that what they are claiming is that when you're done with 1 John, you will live the rest of your life with absolutely no doubt. I want you to write that down. And when you're done, just add it up. It's almost like a mathematical equation. When you're done, you're just going to add it all up and you're going to put an equal sign, right? In other words, you have that entire list. Here's my path. Here are my steps. And then put an equal sign. What does that equal? Assurance or fear? Assurance or discouragement? Assurance or depression? Assurance or a feeling of giving up? Now, you got to be honest. Not with what the text actually says, because I see a lot of people read the text and go, oh, that gave me such assurance. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I know you. 1 John should not have given you any assurance. You should be laying here on the floor in sackcloth and ashes with your clothes ripped and with it just yelling and screaming. But some people read it like, I've got pure assurance. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Have you read what's there? Okay, but I want you to do that. I know that I'm kind of guiding you there. I'm trying not to guide you, but I want you to read it. Forget what I just said. Read it for yourself, right? And again, you're not using a study Bible. You're not using commentaries. You're just you in the text, living with the text. And then when you're done, you're like, okay, that's the path to assurance. That's the steps to assurance. Let me look at that again. And look, if you don't know for sure, I think both people who are currently listening, they're married, right? Just go ask your wife, Hey, based off this list, do you think that would demonstrate that I'm going to heaven and that I'm saved? Be honest with me. Just go ask your kids. Ask your kids. Ask your best friend. They'll probably look at it and go, you think that proves your... They'll probably start laughing. You think that proves that you're... Dude, you're so lost, it's not even funny. Your wife will probably look at you going, oh, honey, that's so cute. That's so cute that you think that proves you're saved. Honey, that proves that you're a piece of human garbage. Okay, hopefully they don't say that. Hopefully. Wait. No. My wife should not be listening into this. No. Okay, everyone. My wife should not be listening to this. This was not an exercise for me. This was an exercise for you guys, not for me. No, I'm excused from this, okay? Because no, my wife would just laugh and say that I'm garbage and that I'm gonna burn and that I'm no good and that it would be a lot of a bad. It would be depressing. It would be discouraging. But I want you to read it. And then just, again, at the end, put the equal sign, because I'm telling you, that will really demonstrate the test. Because everyone reads it as hey, this is going to give you assurance. And I don't know how people walk away with assurance. So you have to start playing some kind of mental game. And again, I was taught this over and over and over. It's a test. And then for some reason, we're all convinced that we passed the test. So you read it that way. All right. So read it five times, one of those times out loud. It's not long. Try to figure out what you think the key verse is. I know everyone's going to tell you 1 John, was it 5:13? I believe everyone says it's 1 John 5:13. I closed the curriculum. Let me go here. 1 John, I believe it's 5:13. Yeah, these things I've written unto you that believe on the name of the Son of God, that you may know that you have eternal life and that you may believe on the name of the Son of God. All right. That's everyone believes that's the key verse. It may be the key verse. It may be. That's okay. And if it is the key verse, maybe the book is a test. And then maybe we just have to acknowledge that no one passed the test. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see. Maybe when you're done, maybe you can contact me and go, my wife said that I'm good to go. And maybe Will can do that. Maybe Ben can do that. Obviously, clearly, I can't do that because my wife has already just made it very clear that I wouldn't pass the test. So maybe the rest of you can say, well, your problem is maybe you need to get saved. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe I need to get saved. Okay, maybe so. But I can tell you that I have a feeling that everyone. I don't want to give it away. You just go through the exercise. You just go through the exercise. That's all I'm going to say. You go through the exercise and you see what you find. All right. You see what you find. Then here's your next assignment. I want you to look as many, and I'm sitting here at this table and I have how many sources here? I have the Ultimate Bible Guide. There's one. I have Explore the Book by J. Sidlow Baxter. That's two. I have, what else do I have here? I have With the Word Commentary by Warren W. Worsby, which is about to fall apart. I do have that. And I got to set all of these books down. They're all over the place, right? This table is an absolute mess. Someone needs to clean it. Okay. All right. And then I have here Nelson's New Illustrated Bible Dictionary. Nelson's New Illustrated Bible Dictionary. What I want you to do is I want you to look. I don't know how many sources you have available to you. I want you to look. You can find Bible dictionaries online. You can find probably 3 or 4 Bible dictionaries online for free. Look, or if you can find some Bible handbooks, I want you to try to find at a minimum 3 sources, at a minimum of 3 sources. And look, and I want you to write down basically their introduction to the book. In other words, they're going to give you an author. They're going to give you date. They may give you where the book was written. They may give you the theological issues surrounding the book. They may give you the historical context. And my daughter is calling me. Okay, there we go. My daughter is calling me. Okay, hang on. I got all kinds of... Okay, she's calling me back again. Okay, I'm trying to turn off the thing. Okay, there we go. All right, hopefully she'll stop calling me back. Okay, all right, there we go. All right, calling me back. All right, there we go. Hopefully I can stop it. My wife is listening. Tell our daughter to stop calling me. Okay, there you go. And it may be an emergency, so check on her. Make sure she's okay. Okay. And that's not the one in Boston. That's the one in Abilene. Okay. All right. So she'll know what to do. There. Now, what I want you to do, though, is I'm sorry about that. I hate when that happens, but okay. I want you to go through at least three sources. And I really, on your paper, I want you to do this on paper. I want you to write down everything you don't have to copy every word in the dictionary, but summarize the sections, right? When was the book written? I think at least one source has it around 90 AD. I think 90 AD is when most have it. Around 90 AD, I think everyone agrees that it's John. Everyone believes that he's, older when he writes it. You can go through all the different things. You can figure out where he wrote it, what was going on, theological considerations, historical context. Just summarize each thing on paper. Now, if you're using 3 sources and you have a difference, right, then what you'll want to do on your paper is say, this source says this, this source says this. Those dictionaries are going to give you a possible purpose of the book. They're going to tell you what the purpose of the book is. See if they all agree, all right? But the reason I want you to do this is I want you to look for clues. Is there any clues about the dating of the book, the history, the historical context? Is there any clues, the theological issues surrounding the book that would give us an indication of how to interpret it? Now, I know that's going to sound like busy work, but it's not, all right? I want you to do all of that work and see what you find, all right? It's called the introductory work, the overview work. Think of it as a book background study, a book background. That's one of the methods of Bible study, a book background. And you want to get all the background just to see if there's any clue. Sometimes the book background completely revolutionizes the way you understand a book. For example, when you study the historical context of the book of Hebrews, boom. Everything is completely changed. The book of Hebrews is written right before 70 AD. It's written to Jews, warning them that This is not a warning about us losing our salvation. It's a warning to them that if they don't turn to Christ, their entire religious system is going to be gone. So therefore, they won't have the ability to become saved because they won't have anything. They won't have a priest. They won't have a temple. They won't have a sacrifice. They won't have anything. So many of the warnings in Hebrews that people interpret as a warning that we could lose our salvation is actually a warning to Jews living in around 66, 67, 68 AD that, hey, everything's about to go bye-bye. No more temple, no more sacrifice, no more priests, no more nothing. And you need something better, which is Christ is the better sacrifice. He's the better priest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you need, don't forsake Christ because you won't have anything left. You won't have anything. Therefore, there's going to be no hope of salvation because your religious system is going to be destroyed. See, the historical context there changes the way you interpret the book. You ignore the historical context, you end up with a flawed interpretation. I'm not saying 1 John is going to lead us to that, but I want you to look at least three sources. You can use a study Bible if they have a good introduction. You can use Bible dictionary, and you can use Bible handbooks. I've got here on the table, I've got like multiple dictionaries, two Bible handbooks, and a commentary here. Also, you can, if you have a commentary, the most of your commentaries begin with an introduction to the book. Use that as well, all right? And just write it out. Just write it out, okay? And again, it doesn't have to be every word, but good summaries, right? For example, I'm just going to go through the Nelson's New Illustrated Bible Dictionary. I'm not going to read it yet, but it's got structure of the epistles. Now, they're going to put 1 John, 2 John 3, and 3 John together, but that's okay. Structure, so they got structure. Authorship and date, historical setting, all right? Philological contribution, special considerations. In other words, break it down into categories and just summarize each category, right? Author, date, historical context, philological considerations. Some of those things, just kind of have four or five categories and just summarize. And if there's a difference, make sure you go, name your source. This source stated this, this source stated this. Purpose of the book, that's another thing. They give an outline here. This is interesting. I'll see if you follow this. Okay, now, I didn't even think, oh man, we're at 56 minutes. Okay, I'm going to mention this just to show you. All right, so the curriculum, it's all about assurance, 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 and they seem to indicate that the assurance we're going to get is to know if we're saved and if we're going to go to heaven. Right? We just read the curriculum. I didn't even realize this. I pick up Nelson's New Illustrated Bible Dictionary. Look at their outline. Now, I don't like this about their outline because their outline is giving away an interpretation, but this gives me a clue of their hermeneutical approach, which is very different from what we just read. Here is their approach. You ready? 1 John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, introduction. Right? Number 2, the conditions for fellowship, 1 John chapter 5 to chapter 2, verse 14. Did you hear that? Conditions for fellowship. Then the cautions to fellowship, 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 27. The characteristics of fellowship, chapter 2, verse 28 to chapter 5, verse 3. The consequences of fellowship, chapter 5, verses 4 through 21. They don't make it on assurance. They make it about fellowship. If it's what they are saying, basically what the Bible dictionary here is doing is that 1 John should be interpreted as a book that tells us, gives us the idea, are we in right fellowship with God? Not about assurance of salvation, but about assurance of fellowship. So think of about it this way. Is 1 John designed to be a book about giving you assurance of salvation based off what you do? Or is the book of 1 John designed to give you assurance of fellowship with God, which would be somewhat related to what you do? That's a radically different approach. Completely different approach. And that is what we're going to have to consider. Now we're at 58 minutes, and we're going to stop right there. All right, so next 6 weeks, 1 John, 1 John, 1 John. What are your assignments? What are your assignments? Read it five times, one of those times out loud. Try to determine what you think the key verse is, right? Very simple. Then do basically a book background study. Grab Bible dictionaries, Number three. I almost forgot. Number three, write down everything. Like go with the idea that this book is about giving you assurance, and write down the steps to assurance, the path to assurance, and write down everything that would seem to be a requirement that you have to do to have assurance. And then at the end, put equal sign and then tell me, are you assured or not assured? How do you feel by the time looking at that long list? Right? Then do a book background by looking up in three sources, Bible dictionaries, study Bibles, Bible handbooks, everything you can find about the background to see if it offers any clue, any help at all, right? And they're going to probably tell you what they think the purpose of the book is. Go ahead and write it down. See if there's agreement or disagreement, all right? That's just very important. Make sure you do that book background concept. Do that. And then you can ask yourself, and then I guess the last thing to do, you can ask yourself, do you think the book is about giving assurance to salvation to determine if you're saved based off what you do? Or do you think the book is about understanding if we have fellowship with God based off what we do? All right, so let me go through those one more time. Read it five times, one of those times out loud. Number two, try to determine the key verse. Number three, steps to assurance. Path to assurance. Write down everything in the book that would seem to say you got to do this, you got to do this to have assurance. And then at the end, ask yourself, are you assured? Are you scared to death? Right? Then number four, do a book background study. Three sources, write down everything you can, purpose of the book, timing of the book, everything. And if there's differences in opinions, make sure those are clearly articulated. All right. And then number five, just ask yourself this question. Is it better to understand 1 John as being a book that's saying, hey, I'm going to test to see if you're really saved? Or is this a book challenging you to consider, are you in right fellowship with God? In other words, you could be saved but not have great fellowship. Is this a book about testing fellowship, or is this a book testing salvation? All right? But clearly, the Bible dictionary here focuses on the fellowship idea. The curriculum focused on the assurance of idea, and they clearly connected it to salvation. Because what were the two questions? Am I saved, and am I going to heaven when I die? That's a completely different approach than what the dictionary seems to be going with. All right? Okay, now I'm going to stop there. Does anybody need me to repeat those five? I think I gave five. All right? Okay? Nobody's asking any questions, so I think we're good. I think we're good, all right? I do apologize for the phone calls that kept coming in. And you know what? Hopefully everything is good to go. Hopefully there's no danger or problems. In fact, I'm going to check here, make sure my... Okay. All right. I'm getting all kinds of messages from my family. All right, so my daughter in Boston saying, I'm going to send a message to you that mom can't read. Okay, I don't know what's going on there. I'm being asked by my other daughter, is a certain move still legal in the WWE, all right, a wrestling move, okay? And then my wife is asking me, am I about to head home? Okay, so yeah, I'm getting all kinds of messages, but no questions. Okay. I'm making sure I'm not missing anything else. Okay. There we go. No, I got a thumbs up from Ben. That's it. That's the end. Ben says thumbs up, and that means everybody else got it. And if everybody else doesn't got it, they can contact Ben, and I'll post his phone number, home address, and email on the internet. No, I will not. Okay. All right. Thanks. Sounds good. All right. Then I'm going to stop because I am starving to death. I don't know if you can hear my stomach, but it is growling like crazy. I'm going to die. Okay. All right. There we go. Will gave me a thumbs up. So we're good to go. All right. And you know what's awesome? It's awesome when you have, and we may have more men listening than we have women listening. And it's awesome to see men participating in Bible study. Because one of the things I've often said is it's frustrating. And sometimes it seems like it's always the women. So it's good. Now, I want both, but it's good to see the men stepping up and studying the Bible. So hopefully this was beneficial. Hopefully it was helpful. Hopefully it got you thinking in the right direction. Hopefully it's a good introduction. And then I don't know how we're going to go move forward. We're going to move forward just trying to resolve this hermeneutical issue. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to come up with all the different hermeneutical approaches. And then we'll just look at each section and just go, which one works, which one doesn't. And then you can go from there. All right. All right, good. Awesome. So Stacy agrees that it is awesome to see men participating in Bible study because, man, sometimes you just like, what in the world? Are women the only people who can study the Bible? So that's awesome. All right. Great. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll probably start working on 1 John a little bit more tomorrow. That's the plan. And we may do some book overview study. We may use Sunday school tomorrow to do this. We may do that. I know we need to do, it kind of fits where we are in the Niagara Creed in a roundabout way. It kind of fits where we are. So maybe I'll implement it there for Sunday just to get us started. So, and I'll probably post that under Theology Central instead of VBC. So if you're listening live tomorrow for Sunday school, it'll probably be under Theology Central. All right, there we go. Everyone have a great day. Thanks for listening. Anybody else can email me, newsif@yahoo.com. Thanks for listening. God bless.